Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, August 19th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCory, in for Avi Wolfman-Arendt. You might have heard all the rhetoric out of the Trump administration lately about testosterone.
Yeah.
We got Department of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth saying he wants to test military personnel over 30 for low T. He says he wants aggressive war fighters in the military. Put that aside for a moment and look at the macro view, Cherry. And there is this real clear trend of testosterone levels on average going down generation after generation. It's true when you control for age, when you control for weight. So something is going on, and there's a lot of questions about what that is and how concerned we should be about it. And is this some sort of a natural evolution or a sign of something that's really genuinely medically troubling? So we're going to talk about that today on the show, because testosterone is not just about aggression.
No.
It's not just about sex. It's important for mood, energy, mental health, muscle health, heart health, bone health. So I'm excited today that we're going to be able to have that conversation and maybe get a little bit more to the bottom of what's going on here.
Yeah. And we don't always talk about men's health, but that is what we're going to be talking about today. And so we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, right?
Yeah.
And we have a great question of the day. What do you think about the drop in average testosterone? And we'd love to also get your take on the Trump administration's take on it. They're calling for this testing of soldiers over age 30. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can put your comments on the chat. If you also considered taking testosterone injections or have had them, this is a safe space. You can share your story.
Yeah, we're going to get to that conversation soon. And before we hit our trio of local news stories, I should say it's another giveaway Wednesday.
Giveaway Wednesday!
All summer, we're giving out tickets to great events in the region, but you have to stick around till the back half of the show to find out what that event is. We'll reveal it and we'll give you a chance to win.
Yeah,
a trio of stories.
Yeah. Cherry, I like that you put the little sweetener in there for the giveaway. We do that on Wednesday. Yeah. I like that. Yes, trio of local news stories. First story, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro signed a sweeping executive order this week limiting the development of data centers in the Commonwealth. The order stopped short of a moratorium on data centers, but the governor is accusing developers of predatory behavior and running roughshod over local communities. Now, here's a clip of Governor Shapiro from a press conference on Tuesday. Take a look, listen.
Starting today, AI data center developers who want to do business in our Commonwealth must respect our communities and abide by these stringent requirements. And if they can't agree to do that, well, they should stop considering Pennsylvania as a home for their project.
Yeah, pretty strong words from the governor. His order eliminates fast-track data center permit approvals, and it forces developers to sign a consent order agreeing to certain standards when it comes to water and power usage, as well as to pollution. Now, this is basically a U-turn for the governor, who just months ago touted data center development in his budget address. He'd actually proposed fast-track permits for developers who signed on to certain standards, but the tide of public opinion, Kevin, has spoken. A recent Annenberg poll found 61% of U.S. citizens, whether they were Republican or Democrat, they opposed new data center construction. That's a 12% jump from just 4 months ago. And so our governor is reading the tea leaves. He's up for re-election this November. He's heavily, favored to win, but his eyes are on 2028. And he knows that if he makes the wrong decision on this issue, which is becoming a major issue across the country, that could put a wet blanket on his hopes to be president.
Yeah, and it's been interesting to see this bipartisan pushback to data centers, of course, that really taps into, it seems, a few different things. One of them is just, I think, this like feeling that like the tech elites are just like controlling too much and running roughshod over people, but also just the affordability crisis. And shout out to WHYY's Susan Phillips for great reporting on this. And, you know, she points out, and we've been pointing out on the show, that even though there's not a data center built in Pennsylvania right now, the prospect of data centers are driving electricity bills higher the grid operators price in what's going to happen down the line. And they see this as a thing that's coming, and they're already charging us more money
yeah.
for electricity usage now for data centers that don't even exist yet.
Yeah, I mean, I checked my electricity bill, $86 more than it was this time last year. And people are feeling that. They're complaining about it. And so, you know, this is Shapiro sort of stepping up and sort of reversing course because he hears the cries of the people.
Yep, yep. Story number two, Cherry.
Yeah.
A Democrat eked out a victory in a special election yesterday in a very deep red Western Pennsylvania mm-hmm. State House district. And now top Democrats, including Governor Shapiro, are saying this points to signs that there's going to be a blue wave in Pennsylvania in the midterms. Shapiro posted on X that this is a district where in 2024, President Trump won by 18 points. The Republican carried the State House race that year by 30 points. So it was Democrat Brandon Dukes who pulled out the victory over Republican Scott Timko in the State House 12th District race. And this special election happened, Cherry, because the incumbent Republican resigned for personal reasons. And when Dukes is sworn in, the Democrats will have a 2-seat lead in the mm-hmm. State House. But then this same pair of people will have to run again against each other in November.
Yeah.
And then be sworn in January. So it's a temporary result in this race. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there was a win by a Democrat in this district for the first time in generations said something to, I think, the political tea leaf readers about maybe where the electorate in Pennsylvania is. And Democrats are specifically saying this shows us that we can win races not only in districts that Trump has dominated, but maybe more of the swingy ones mm-hmm. where if they win enough of those, say they can take control of the Pennsylvania State Senate, which they haven't controlled in a very long time,
yeah.
or flip some of these very contentious congressional races, which, of course, balances the power in Washington,
mm-hmm.
D.C.
I do think that Democrats are just much more motivated to vote right now, especially even in these really small, low turnout elections, because
right.
that's what special elections are. They're on some random Tuesday. People may not have even known
right.
that there was an election going on. And the Democrats won by 100 votes. So, you know, it's tight, but they did win. And that's all to say that Republicans, if they want to hold on to seats, even in deep red districts, they'll have to work a lot harder than they're used to working because Democrats are so motivated. And I have to mention that, you know, Democrats have been trying to flip the Senate. They really want this trifecta to give to Governor Josh Shapiro. They want him to have the seat. Got a Democrat in the governor's mansion, Democratic Senate and Democratic House. And they got the House and they got the governor's mansion, but they want that Senate. So if this was a Senate seat, I would be like, what? But still have a lot to work to do. But, you know, look at the tea leaves.
We will see in November
who's
more motivated.
Yes.
Story number three, Cherry.
Yes. Some of Philadelphia's oldest and most iconic restaurants are shutting their doors or they're being sold off. And yes, you guessed it, a gray wave. Yeah. It's sad. Restaurants like Kelly's Seafood in Northeast Philly, which was managed by three generations of the Kelly family, that's going to close this month. Same fate for the 70-year-old Steve Stein's famous deli in Bustleton, the century-old Cherry Street Tavern in Logan Square, and decades-old Mama Maria's in East Passyunk. Those two are both up for
classic places.
And those are just a few on the list. And shout out to the Philadelphia Inquirer for their reporting on this. Apparently, turnover is just part of the process with family-owned small businesses, and it happens when no one in the family wants to take over from the next generation, right? So they have no choice. They either sell the property, sell the business, or they close the doors, and that's what's happening here. And they have a lot of kids. I mean, the family, you know, the older generation, they loved it. But the younger kids, the kids are like, I don't want to do it. It's too hard. I want to do something else. And that's their choice.
I have this like, you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone feeling in me right now. These like classic old mom and pop spots that like just are so much cooler and better than any of like the corporate chains mm-hmm. that are out there. And like you think they're going to be there forever. And then, like you said, a generation changes and all of a sudden it's gone.
Yeah.
My grandmother worked for a long time at a classic diner in Kensington called Amici's. And we all loved it. We have all these family memories of it. And then it closed and it, like, it's nothing now. And like, I wish I could still go there. I wish I could tap into that because you have all those emotional memories. Yeah.
Yeah. But business is hard. Everything, food prices are high. You got to pay higher wages. Yeah. And it's just
it's a tough business.
It's a tough business. But I will say there are quite a few that will stick around, like McGillin's Old Ale House in Center City. They've been in operation since 1860, and the owner says they're not going anywhere anytime soon. So there are some iconic places that are going to be here for decades to come. And so coming up, we're going to be talking about testosterone and the Trump administration's take on it. What is your take? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. We have two smart people coming up. This is Studio 2. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gray.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron. There's been a lot more talk lately about testosterone. It's a vital hormone, especially for men, and recently it's found itself at the center of a new Trump administration policy.
Yeah, last month, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth announced members of the armed forces over age 30 would be screened for testosterone deficiency, emphasizing his goal of a, quote, high T Department of War. Here's Hegseth making that case.
I'm authorizing a new screening program for testosterone deficiency for our service members, ensuring you have the right testosterone levels to operate at your absolute best.
Now, medical experts are worried that this new screening policy isn't the right approach to a very real issue. Men's average testosterone levels, even among those who are healthy and athletic, have been dropping over the past several decades. And doctors aren't quite sure why it's happening. But it set off this wave of men concerned about their own T levels, with some even turning to hormone replacement.
Yeah, so today on Studio 2, we're tackling testosterone. We'll discuss the research behind low T, what medical therapies men are turning to, and how this is all affecting conversations around men and masculinity. And to help us break this down, we're joined by two guests. We have Adar Eisenbrook. He's a professor, assistant professor of psychology at SUNY Purchase, and the co-author of the Washington Post op-ed titled "The Testosterone Craze Fuels Fear, Not Masculinity." Adar, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you very much for having me.
We also have Dr. Paul Gittens. He is a board-certified urologist and director of the Rockwell Centers for Sexual Medicine and Wellness. Dr. Paul Gittens, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. This is going to be a great show.
Yeah, I like that. Yes. And as always, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What's your take on average T levels dropping, as well as the Trump administration's approach to it? Are you or someone you know worried about low testosterone or even considering hormone replacement? This is a safe space. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTube viewers, hello, you can leave your comments in the live chat.
Dr. Gittens, could you set the table for us here on just why should the average person care about testosterone? We've been saying the average levels are dropping. Why care? Why does it matter?
Yeah, so I think we have to kind of go take a step back and just kind of discuss what testosterone is. So testosterone is one of the, it's the predominant male hormone. It's produced by the testicles. And what it does is it kind of floats in the bloodstream, and then it comes in contact with different organs. And what we'll see as a benefit of testosterone is that we can see an increase in sexual health. So when we talk about sexual desire, libido, erectile function, sexual motivation, it also can help with muscle and body composition. So it can help with skeletal muscle mass, strength. Bone health is really important. Reproductive health as well. So, you know, I also work with male infertility patients. And so we do measure testosterone levels. It can help with mental health as well. So we do see patients that have lower levels of testosterone that can contribute to their depression. So it's a vital hormone for males, and it's important that we try to keep it at a certain level But you know, we want to make sure that if we're treating those men, that we want to make sure we're treating them if they're symptomatic. And so we want to treat men that have problems in those areas with testosterone. And there's other products that we use that can also boost their levels.
So what are we seeing? And let's bring you into the conversation, Adar. Like, do we when we look at the why? Like, why is the level dropping? I know there's competing theories out there. Maybe you can just help unpack what we know and what we don't know.
Sure. What we know is that it's pretty complicated, and there's very unlikely to be one single cause that's producing all of the drop. It's very likely that there are multiple causes, each of which contribute somewhat to this sort of decades-long decline in average testosterone in men. So some of those causes are, they sort of cluster around these lifestyle issues. So diet, obesity, insufficient exercise, definitely environmental toxins like microplastics. Sleep health, getting enough sleep is important in having healthy testosterone levels. So each of these little lifestyle issues, they sort of add up on top of each other, and collectively, it seems like they're producing this very long-term decline in average testosterone levels. But I don't think there is one simple, you know, silver bullet cause that we can look for here.
Yeah, thank you for that. By the way, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What's your take on average T levels dropping, as well as the Trump administration's approach to it? Are you or someone you know worried about low testosterone or even considering hormone replacement? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. I want to bring in a caller. We have Alex from Philadelphia on the line. Alex, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, so I was curious if you could comment on the opposite problem. I have very high testosterone. I'm 51, but I have the testosterone of a like a teenager, and I had to do a lot of testing. They found a micro tumor that's stable in my pituitary gland, and my primary care physician isn't concerned because there's some correlation between high testosterone and prostate cancer. But you know, I'm very vigorous and have high muscle tone, and I'm sympathetic for those who have low testosterone. I'm just curious if you could talk about like the other
Yeah.
problems that
Yeah.
could arise.
Thank you so much, Alex from Philadelphia. Paul, Dr. Gittens, if you could comment on that, and then I have a follow-up to that to sort of talk about what the Trump administration is proposing. So if you could respond to Alex from Philadelphia and talk about high testosterone and some of the issues that that could cause.
Yeah, so there's no correlation with ailments with elevated testosterone levels. Oftentimes, when guys have high testosterone levels, they also have a elevation in something called sex hormone binding globulin. And so what that does is it falsely elevates the testosterone. But when you look at the free testosterone, which is the more active testosterone, that most likely is equal in level. So I would just talk to that listener and say that they probably need a little more testing to figure out why he has an elevated level of testosterone, and most likely it's because he has an increase in his binding hormone. But in general, there's no problems with men that have elevated testosterone if it's specifically from just an elevation. I mean, there's always another caveat to that. The other caveat is to make sure that his physician does a testicular ultrasound, because there are some testicular cancers that can increase testosterone. But in general, there's no problem with an elevation of testosterone.
And so I wanted to get both of your takes on the Trump administration, specifically Secretary Hegseth, announcement that they want to do testing on men or just soldiers. Not necessarily, they haven't talked about whether women would get tested on this, but testing on U.S. soldiers over age 30 for a testosterone deficiency. Is this something that you would prescribe? Just your general thoughts on this method of detecting issues with low testosterone. And I'll start with you, Dr. Paul.
Yeah, so there's no data that shows that just indiscriminate testing of testosterone is really worth much. But I would say that if there are men that are symptomatic, meaning that they have lower levels of libido, energy, muscle mass, all the things that we know that testosterone are beneficial for, then those are men that we would actually treat. So if the goal of the administration is to first check testosterone and then to go back to those men and say, are you symptomatic? And if they are symptomatic, then that would be a reason to treat those men, right? But the indiscriminate testing of testosterone in any medical literature is really contraindicated.
Yeah.
Because the fear, I guess, is what you treat something that isn't really a problem per se, and maybe you create a problem by treating it. Is that part of the problem here, Dr. Gittins?
Exactly. So testosterone itself, so some of the risks of taking testosterone, especially in that age group, is infertility. So if you're treating a male with testosterone, this is any male. If you're treating them with t a testosterone product, then their sperm counts will go down and they'll have a problem with fertility. Other issues are that it can increase your red blood cells, and those blood cells can lead to either elevation in your blood pressure, but it also can lead to blood clots in your legs. So those are
So there are
some
some
of the
downsides to
complications
this. Yeah.
on the
I'm
course.
curious, in your practice, Dr. Gittins, from the patients you have and talk to, do you find more men kind of going out of their way to inject themselves with testosterone and doing some of these things based on these cultural conversations? And then you have to step in and say, hey, whoa, 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 slow down here.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you listen to the radio and you listen to commercials, testosterone is the best thing ever. It's the panacea that will take care of all problems. So, as a physician, it's our job to say, hold on, wait a minute. Are you having any symptoms? And then what are your levels? And if they match up, then those are patients that are going to get a benefit from being treated.
Yeah, I got to ask because Ken from Yardley wrote in and he wants to clarify, what does it mean to say that average testosterone levels are decreasing, and what is average testosterone levels versus, what we're seeing now? And maybe Paul, you can help with that. And Adair, feel free to jump in at any time if you have something to add. But I wonder, what does that this mean? Because this overall decrease in testosterone levels, are we seeing, is do you agree with that? And does that, are we seeing some overall sort of symptoms associated with that decrease?
Yeah, so we know that as men age over time, then their testosterone will decrease, right? So we know that is about 2% of free testosterone per year. After the age of 40, the male testosterone will go up. But what we're talking about is really when you look at the studies, and what's a little more concerning is when you're looking at decades worth of data. So if you're looking at a male that's 30, 40, 50 years now, and you compare them to a male that's 30, 40, or 50 years old 2 decades ago, so we're seeing a decrease in the level of testosterone when you're comparing those two men that group of men. And that's what's a little more concerning is the trend of testosterone is decreasing over the, at least for the most studies, the trend is decreasing over decades. And that's really what this whole thing is about.
Yeah.
If I could actually just
Yeah,
add
go
something to
right
that,
ahead, Adair.
the listener asked,
Star.
what is average testosterone? And of course, there's a number that's just the population average, and you can look at different averages in different age groups and things like that. But part of what complicates that whole picture is that testosterone itself is dynamic in the male body. It's not a fixed thing. It's not like your height, like you just have a height and that's kind of your height in a stable sense. Maybe you shrink a little as you get older, but it's pretty stable. Testosterone's not really like that. It's dynamic within men within a day, day to day. So the same man might have very different testosterone levels on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of the same week. And it also fluctuates in response to different life events. So testosterone goes down, for example, when men find a mate, find a partner, get married. It goes down when they have a child and then rebounds slowly as their child gets older. But so this idea that there's sort of a number that is the correct number for men's testosterone levels to be at just really isn't true, right? It's this much more complicated dynamic thing. And these fluctuations are actually functional. Testosterone is supposed to fluctuate within men in response to all of these different conditions. So it's actually very hard to sort of pinpoint a number and say, this is the amount of testosterone any given man should have.
Because it sounds like even if you were to test different men, that test result will be dependent on what time of day you tested them, what day of the week you tested them, what was going on in their life. Is that a fair assessment, Adar?
I'm sorry.
Sure. No, that's right. So it's going to be responsive to, did they, are they a single guy who spoke to a potential mate recently, right? That causes testosterone to spike. Are they just getting into a new relationship and feeling committed and investing in that new relationship? That's going to cause their testosterone to be lower. And that's not an indicator of poor health or anything like that. That's just
Interesting.
testosterone sort of fluctuating in response to the man's challenges and opportunities.
But we are seeing this clear trend through time and
Yes,
generation. And so
that's
I guess
right.
one of
On
the
top of all that,
questions I had in the setup to the show was like, is this genuinely concerning, or is this some sort of natural evolution that maybe speaks to the fact, and tell me if this is just way off base. Like, it speaks to the fact that, like, men aren't doing as much manual labor as they used to and don't need to, or men are having fewer children, or something like that, that like maybe explains this trend. And I know we don't really know the answer, but I'm just curious for both of your takes on like, is that a possible answer? Something societal that's just changed about the way men function in the world?
Yeah, and Paul, it looks like you had something to say.
Yeah, I think what Adar was saying is absolutely right. But what we're also looking at is this clinically significant drop in testosterone. And that's what we're worried about. We don't want this trend to continue. And going back to your question, all of these, we're not the same as we were 20 or 30 years ago. So we're more overweight. We don't exercise as much. We have more stress, more depression. And so we think those are contributing factors to why we're seeing this trend. But I think we need to understand it because we don't want the bulk of men to get to this clinically significant level. Because what Adar was saying is absolutely right. We do go through fluctuations, but those fluctuations for many men aren't clinically significant where they're suffering from symptoms of low testosterone. And that's what we need to figure out. We do know that if our testosterone is extremely low, then men have higher rates of mortality, right? And we know if it's extremely low, we have higher rates of cardiovascular disease and metabolic diseases. So this is something that we really need to get a better understanding and answer those questions of why are we seeing this trend? Going back to the trend, not all studies show there's several studies that show that we are having a trend, but not all studies show that. There was a study that was published that showed that we did see a trend in lower testosterone, but when they adjusted for age, obesity, stress levels, waistline levels, then things kind of equaled out. So we can't say definitively that we're having a decrease over time, but there are a number of studies that suggest that.
But you're suggesting that this is a real canary in the coal mine, possibly for just an overall, I guess, gut check on men's health,
It is.
Dr. Giddens. So
That's right.
how what do you see a fix for that large scale? Like, how do you talk to patients about this?
So, for me, I look at low testosterone as a symptom. And so when I'm evaluating patients, we want to make sure that they are getting enough sleep. We want to talk about weight. We want to talk about all the things that we can do to increase testosterone levels, like weightlifting, like decreased stress, getting enough sleep, watching cortisol levels, et cetera. So we want to look at it as a symptom for some of our men, but other men that coming with low testosterone and they have none of those symptoms, then we want to say these are opportunities to treat you to help you feel better.
Yeah. I want to read this comment from Matthew, who says, I'm wondering about testosterone and the psychology of comparison. I heard the NPR segment about the workplace where the men had their testosterone tested, and everyone joked about how they might perceive one another differently once they knew who had the highest and lowest levels. So I want to kind of connect this trend that we're seeing with the whole cultural conversation that is being had, Adar, because people are seeing, there's been arguments saying that, look, you know, men have become soft as we see this whole and the idea that, you know, masculinity is directly tied to testosterone levels. We heard Secretary Hegseth talk about, you know, having a lethal Department of War. And this is why he wants to inject people with testosterone. Your thoughts, if you could try to help us understand how we got here, where masculinity is tied to testosterone in such a way.
Yeah, Cherry, I think you're sort of hitting the nail on the head there by placing, you know, Hegseth's new policy within the context of this cultural moment where there's suddenly so much more attention being paid to testosterone and emphasis on men's testosterone levels. And of course, for men to be paying more attention to their health, that's a great thing. Men mm-hmm. should pay more attention to their health. But the danger comes from what you're talking about, and there's been a lot of reporting showing this, that men start treating their testosterone levels as sort of, you know, their manhood score. And they just start trying to go for the high score, and they're competing against each other, they're competing against other people online. They think that the higher their testosterone, the more of a man they are, the better of a man they are. And I think that's in part where the real risk of Hegseth's new policy comes in. You know, it's possible for that to be implemented in the military in a sort of medically responsible way. I think maybe it's more likely that it wouldn't be all that medically responsible for the reasons Dr. Gittins described. But you know, taking testosterone, if indicated, as diagnosed by a doctor, as supervised by a doctor, that can be done safely. The real risk is in promoting this sort of hyper-masculine, high-T aesthetic as something that men, especially young men, aspire to. And then what starts happening, and we're already seeing this happening, is there's sort of this unregulated use of testosterone where men are using it because they think, like Dr. Gittins said, it's going to be a panacea for all that ails them, mm-hmm. right? It's going to make them feel better. It's going to make them stronger. It's going to make them more successful. You know, women are going to like them better. All these things. It's just going to cure all that ails them. And there are actually very significant risks that come with that, right? You get this lifelong dependency on exogenous testosterone. You have fertility risks, among some other health risks. So I think from my perspective, the real danger to this new Pentagon policy is in some part regarding, you know, the troops themselves, but also related to this broader cultural moment. I think it's promoting testosterone as this kind of manhood index, or it's like a pinball score, right? It's like, what's your manhood score? Test your T, and you have to try to get the high score. And if your score isn't high, there's something wrong with you. I think that's actually a very dangerous cultural idea. And I see the Pentagon policy as a reaction to that, but also promoting that. And that's really where a lot of my concern comes from.
Dr. Gittins, I'm curious, just like, you know, we might have this stereotype in our minds, the one that we're talking about here, of like high testosterone men being more aggressive, alpha male types. If you actually look at the numbers, does it bear out like that? Like, has anyone studied that? Or like, would you just be kind of surprised? Like, no, it all kind of falls in a normal range, but that guy acts like that because that's who that guy is. It doesn't tie to his testosterone.
Yeah, I mean, there's no studies there. I mean, there's a very low correlation with like aggression with testosterone levels. You know, my testosterone is 2000 and I feel great. No, it's not the case, right? It's and when you look at it in such a simplified way, then that's when you go in the wrong direction, right? So the way I tell my patients, and I feel like as a, you know, a healthcare practitioner, we have to educate. It's my job to educate our patients. And the example that I give is that when a guy comes in, he says, I need my testosterone to be 2000. I say this, I say, you know, I drink a cup of coffee, right? I drink a small cup of coffee a day and I can, you know, I'm energized throughout the whole day. Some people need more coffee for them to be energized, right? And some people need less. So that's the same thing with testosterone. And one of the key things that we always forget, and this might be get too medical, but it's the receptor. So it's not just the testosterone, but it's how our bodies interpret that testosterone. And that's what makes us different. So that's why some guys can have a testosterone, say, of 300 and they feel wonderful.
Yeah.
And there's another guy that may have a testosterone of 500 and they may feel, oh, not so great. Right. It's because it's It's not just the testosterone, it's how it interacts with our body. It's also these other hormones that we have, like dopamine and all the, and our estrogen levels that also affect us. So I would just, I would warning, it's just a big warning, and beware when somebody comes in or when you're comparing with your friends saying your testosterone is this and I feel more manly, because it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, and we're about to come up on a break, and the voice you just heard was Dr. Paul Gittens. He is a board-certified urologist and director of the Rockwell Centers for Sexual Medicine and Wellness. We also have Adar Eisenbrook, an assistant professor of psychology at SUNY Purchase. He's the co-author of the Washington Post op-ed, The Testosterone Craze Fuels Fear, Not Masculinity. And we're going to have much more of this conversation, because coming up after the break, we'll get insights on how to keep your testosterone levels higher naturally. So stick with us. Lots to come. We have a caller. We have comments. This is Studio 2. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCory in for Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Before we return to our conversation about testosterone, it's time to reveal this week's Giveaway Wednesday event. Hit it, Al. Those are the sweet sounds of country music singer-songwriter Margot Price. And on September 12th, she'll be in KOP as part of the Concerts Under the Stars series. Two tickets to the show will run you $82, but be the fifth person who emails us now at studio2@whyy.org, and you'll get a pair on us.
Yeah, love Giveaway Wednesday. Now, back to our big questions today. So what's your take on average T levels dropping and the Trump administration's approach to it? Are you or someone you know worried about low testosterone or even considering hormone replacement? The number to call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, keep those comments coming in the live chat.
Let me reintroduce our guest. We have with us Adar Eisenbrook. He's the assistant professor of psychology at SUNY Purchase. And Paul Gittens is a board-certified urologist and director of the Rockwell Centers for Sexual Medicine and Wellness.
Yes, and I want to bring in another caller. We have Eric from Delco on the line. Eric, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hi. I'm just wondering, is there any... I don't know if this is easy to tell, but is there any correlation or causation between basically societal shaming of men trying to assume traditional roles in family that may push testosterone levels down?
Interesting. That's Eric from Delco, wondering about whether or not, you know, men being pushed to be a little less, I guess, traditionally masculine, whether that impacts testosterone levels. Adar, any thoughts on that, Dr. Gittens?
So, you know, I'm not aware of any evidence directly linking changes in men's social roles or you know, shame, like the caller said, regarding men trying to assume what the caller called a traditional role in the family, with any of those being linked directly with lower testosterone. I don't know of any evidence on that. But I think that that cultural shift of men's social roles changing, men's family roles changing, is not necessarily a cause of lower testosterone, but I think it sort of sets the stage for this cultural moment. I think part of the reason that so many men are becoming more and more concerned with testosterone and sort of with masculinity and manhood itself, it's because of these changing social norms and social roles. I think, you know, in so many ways, as lots of people have documented, men are just not doing as well right now as they were 30, 40, 50 years ago, educationally, professionally, romantically. So I think a lot of men feel sort of like, hey, I've lost my place in society. I'm not valued the way maybe I think my father or grandfather was valued. And that concern about their place in society, I think, is part of what motivates this emphasis or maybe reclaiming of masculinity. And I think that sort of fuels the concern about testosterone. So it's a, you know, in some ways, I'm sort of flipping it around back on the caller. I'm not aware of any evidence that the social changes have caused the decline in testosterone, but I think they might in part be fueling the concern about that decline in testosterone.
And I wonder, Dr. Gittins, do people come to you and say, hey, you know, doc, I feel like I lost my mojo a little bit. And, you know, maybe want to kind of get a little bit of an injection. I know women sometimes get injections of testosterone as well after going through menopause. So just your thoughts, how does it getting the injections, does it actually help people when they need it?
Yeah, so that's probably the most common complaint that I get is that I lost my mojo and my vitality is down. You know, I just don't feel the same in the gym as I used to. And, you know, what I tell them is that first we look at the whole picture. What else is going on in their life? You know, are they overweight? Are they eating well? Are they getting enough sleep? And then we can go into some of the testing. And if their testing shows that they have a low testosterone, then yeah, injection will possibly help with some of their symptoms. But if their testosterone, say, is already really high and they feel that way, then an injection really wouldn't help them at all. So that's why you want to make sure you're considering all different events. You want to look at their medications that they're on. Some medications can cause low testosterone. You want to look at their lifestyle. You want to look at everything. Their sleep, et cetera. Do they have sleep apnea? Are they using a CPAP? Do they have diabetes? How do we control their diabetes a little bit better? You know, all these things are so important to put together, and then we'll see if the testosterone will work, because those symptoms that I mentioned before, they're just not exclusive to testosterone, right? If somebody comes in with depression, they're gonna have some of the similar symptoms. So we have to see exactly if it points to testosterone therapy and if it's going to be efficacious for that person.
Getting lots of nice comments from men and women on Facebook, YouTube, and in our inbox. Carol on Facebook writes in, critiquing the Trump administration, healthcare resources should be used to address real health problems. Howard from New Jersey asks and raises concerns about how testosterone and microplastics are impacting semen and the testosterone conversation. We've been talking about the why behind it all, and we've obviously been talking about diet, exercise, etc. But are there environmental factors, like, you know, this person mentioned microplastics, or PFAS is another one that people are concerned about. Could something like that be part of the conversation here too, Dr. Gittins?
Yeah, you know, that is definitely one of the factors that we look at. You know, that's all new data. When we look at PFAS, we're looking at, you know, microplastics and how it can be what we call as endocrine disruptors. And endocrine disruptors means that it's kind of disrupting our hormonal pathways. And so that is definitely a possibility. I think we need more data. We need to be able to examine, you know, how their intake of these products are and how it could be affecting not just their testosterone, but also their fertility. And this is maybe outside the topic, but we're also seeing a lowering of sperm counts when we're looking at generational semen analyses as well. So, you know, we're looking at the whole men's health picture and how the environment may be affecting men over time.
Yeah. And by the way, Rebecca writes, I am 54 years old and was offered topical testosterone as part of hormone replacement treatment, HRT. And I started taking it, but I have hair loss in my family and I'm fearful that this will cause additional hair thinning. So I stopped. I know this is a concern of lots of women and probably men. And her question is, can a small amount of daily topical testosterone cause hair loss? And I asked you this, Dr. Gittins, and also, you know, how women use testosterone. I wanted to throw that in there as well.
Yeah. So in my practice, we treat men and women for hormonal difficulties that they may be having. And so testosterone is a treatment that we will give women, but it is off label. So I have to say it's off label. But when you look at the hormonal makeup of women, women actually have more testosterone than estrogen. Most people don't find that hard to believe.
Wow.
Even though estrogen is the dominant hormone, there's more testosterone. Women have more testosterone. They have tons of receptors for testosterone. So in terms of the side effects, one of the side effects of testosterone could be hair loss, but it depends on how much testosterone that you're getting. So the caller really wants to go to someone that's responsible, that's checking their levels, and that can manage their testosterone. But as I mentioned, testosterone is not FDA approved for women, even though
a lot of it, yeah.
can We can't do that.
Why don't we go to Dan from Winmore on line one? Dan, what's your question or comment on Studio 2 today?
I think just to put things in perspective over this sort of great focus on testosterone, especially over the last couple of months, spurred by Pete Hegseth, I would ask him, what were General Eisenhower's testosterone levels on D-Day? How many push-ups could he do? Was he really qualified to lead the D-Day invasion? Hmm. I mean, this has gotten out of hand with, you know, this focus on just testosterone. As your guest has been saying, there are environmental factors, and they're not all external. Sleep is one. Nutrition is one. Overweight is one. So look at the possible causes first before you start supplementing, and especially supplement, I would think, only if you have symptoms of fatigue or whatever.
Adar, what's your response to our caller Dan from Winmore?
Yeah, you know what? It reminds me of there was an interview a few months ago in the New York Times with General Stanley McChrystal, who was this, you know, right, decorated Special Forces commander. And this was even before the testosterone policy was announced, but he was talking more generally, and he said, you know, the number of people in the military who really need to have big bulging biceps and be able to kick down a door, it's really very small. Mm. Most of the people in the military are doing intelligence and logistics and communications and all of these other jobs that are increasingly technical and you know, very specialized based on lots of training and skill. And it's not just a brute strength task, right? The military these days, as I understand it, and I'm not a military expert, is, you know, really not based on brute strength. It's much more technical and skill-based than maybe it was 50 or 100 years ago. So given that, I sort of agree with the caller. I think, you know, the new testosterone in the military policy strikes me as a little bit more of an aesthetic policy. You know, it's sort of promoting this very masculine aesthetic more so than it is grounded in the science of testosterone, or based on what I've read from military experts, really the science of military preparedness.
Yeah.
Like to, can I push back just a little bit? Yeah. But I do think that low testosterone is a major health issue, but if you're symptomatic. So if you have low testosterone, you're symptomatic, and you may not be able to process information. You may not have the energy. You may have low, you may have forgetfulness. You may have depression. So I do think that in certain situations, if you're symptomatic, I think testosterone should be replaced. And I think it is an important health topic, but as I don't think that it should just be tested indiscriminately, and patients should be treated without having symptoms.
And by the way, we teased this before the break. We wanted to sort of talk about, give people some tips on how, you know, to raise testosterone naturally, to keep their levels at a healthy way without having to resort to injections. Dr. Paul, are there, and then, you know, if you could quickly tell us that, and then we had a couple fact versus fiction questions we wanted to throw in before this hour ends.
Yeah, quickly, there's a number of things we can do. So we can lose weight, right? Especially guys that have that hard visceral fat, we want to bring that down because it can lower testosterone as well as cause inflammation. We want to exercise. Resistance training is huge, especially if we're lifting and we're doing resistance training, we want to work on our back because it's such a big muscle group in our legs. So that will increase testosterone the most. Increasing sleep, we want to get into our circadian rhythm. We know that testosterone goes up, and it's important that we stay in that rhythm. We want to make sure that we're lowering our stress, which is another big thing. Lastly, we also want to look at our medications. Maybe our medications are also causing a lowering of testosterone. So that's kind of a quick kind of you know, to-do list for a lot of guys that want to increase their testosterone.
Yeah, and we're having this conversation in the context of, you know, this ongoing conversation about male loneliness or some sort of male crisis, and we're seeing fewer people, you know, maybe entering the dating pool, pursuing partners. Is there any intersection here that we can say anything about when it comes to those two factors, or are they just maybe two things that are just happening in society at the same time? And I guess I'll throw that to you, Adar.
Yeah, I think those sort of male struggles that you were just talking about in the mating market, for example, I think for many men, it sort of freaks them out, right? They feel insecure, they feel nervous, they're starting to panic about, you know, what's my place in this society? Do other people value me? And if they're not getting the kind of value from others that they want from, you know, dating or education or the workplace, then they're going to start just looking in other places. And in some corners of our culture, they're hearing the message, hey, if you have higher testosterone, that makes you better, right? That makes you a better man. You'll be more valued. So I think it's those struggles that you were just talking about that for some men is kind of motivating this drive to be more manly and have higher testosterone.
And we'll give you the final word this hour, Dr. Paul Gittins. Your thoughts on that conversation?
So I think that, you know, when it comes to, you know, lower testosterone, that's where we're seeing those problems. You know, guys that have low testosterone, you know, they're going to have lower libido and lower desire to date and do all these things. So we do want to make sure that those guys that are having those problems or having those symptoms are treated. So I'm going to kind of take it from the other direction, right? So, you know, so that's my take on most of this is really if you're symptomatic and you have low testosterone, then yeah. I do believe you should be treated.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That, again, was the voice of Dr. Paul Gittins, a board certified urologist and director of the Rockwell Centers for Sexual Medicine and Wellness. Dr. Gittins, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And also thank you to Adar Eisenbrook, assistant professor of psychology at SUNY Purchase. We appreciate your time and for being here as well, Adar.
Thank you so much. This was a great conversation.
Our show is produced by Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryan, and Benjamin Abrams. Al Banks and Mike Schiffler engineered today's show. I'm executive producer Kevin McCrory.
Yes, and I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you to everybody who called in, wrote in. We appreciate you, and thank you so much for listening.